Welcome to the Dope Black Woman podcast, the podcast where we share stories of Black excellence as part of our safe digital sisterhood. I'm Leanne Levos.
I'm Rashan, but you can call me Shan.
I'm Livs.
I'm Laurel Brown.
I'm Victoria.
So today's episode, we are discussing colorism. Colorism is a huge issue in the Black community and in minority communities in general, I feel like. Just to give it a definition, colorism is literally discrimination based on how dark your skin is. And these issues usually come from or exist within the same ethnic or racial group. So we all know that colorism is something that technically or essentially has been indoctrinated in our communities through slavery and colonialism, whether we're talking about house slave versus field slave, or whether we're talking about Tutsi-Hutu conflict in Africa, straight down to what we see now in terms of kind of the disproportionate dating scenario that we see with Black men disproportionately dating lighter skinned or white women. So guys, we have a lot to talk about today. We're all different women coming from different backgrounds. We all have different skin tones ranging from light to dark. And so I think it would be really interesting to explore the different experiences that we have as it relates to colorism. So what's the experiences that you've had as it relates to colorism? Or do you think that it's even really an issue in the community?
Yeah, I mean, my background in terms of my career is with children and young people. And I think what I find really difficult to stomach is the way that the messaging comes through at such an early age. So if you look at a lot of the literature and a lot of the tools that are used in even like early year settings, like nurseries and stuff, either it's white children in the books, or if they are children of colour or Black children in these books, they're often quite light. So I think from such an early age, the message that is communicated to Black people is around white is right and to aspire to be lighter. And obviously then there are ramifications, whether we look at beauty, whether we look at employment, or just the way in which people are labelled. It is just really problematic, I think, still.
When you were growing up, Laurel, did you find that that affected you? Like, did you find that not having that representation as a dark-skinned Black woman affected you in any way, shape or form?
It's difficult because a lot of this is probably unconscious. You absorb messages like unconsciously. And so I can't say absolutely, yes, this particular book or this specific incident affected my self-perception. And I think obviously I have to bear in mind that I'm not necessarily considered a dark-skinned person. And when I was, for example, having social interactions, people would say, oh, you're like, you're brown, you're not dark. So people would make a point of almost complimenting me by not calling me dark skin, and just making sure I knew that I wasn't dark skin. But I can't say that I then had negative experiences in terms of my own experience of education, etc.
I think colorism is a huge issue in the Black community, and I think it is just as big as racism, because it's this whole idea of where you fit in a spectrum, and it can relate to just your overall value. And I really kind of struggle as a light-skinned woman talking about colorism, because I never want to come across as being naive or patronizing. And I think in the past, when colorism's been brought up, it's always kind of glossed over as like, oh, you know, all women are beautiful, you should love the body you're in. And like, we know that is a lot more complicated than that. There are like structural, historical elements behind it. And if you just paint it as something as kind of superficial as beauty, you kind of erase all the history that's there. And I think that's been my problem kind of when people talk about it in the media and people talk about the beauty industry, that they phrase it as just like, oh, you should just love the skin that you're in, and like da 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 da, and it's all very like glossy and fluffy. And it's like, well, actually there's a really dark history here that we're only just now, as you said, starting to unpack.
Yeah. And so do you find that it's something that you consciously have to avoid or consciously have to be aware of because you are lighter skinned?
Yeah. So like, say if I talked about representation of like Black women, or if I talked about hair representation, I always have to bear in mind, like, I have quote unquote acceptable Black hair. Like, I have like the curly, kinky kind that is cute and people like. And in terms of my complexion, it's all very like within an acceptable box. So it's like, even though I'm like all for equality and shouting for equality, it's like I have to remember I come with privilege as well. And that can be a like difficult line to a difficult thing to balance?
Well, when I was growing up in Jamaica, I was, even though I'm mixed, I'm dark. And I was much darker when I was younger. I used to spend lots of time in the sun, et cetera, et cetera. And same thing. So it was always you're pretty, even though you're dark, as opposed to you're pretty because you're dark. And I grew up in a black majority country. You know what I mean? So it's really interesting. Like, I remember in prep school, I went to a Jewish prep school in Jamaica, actually very random. So I was one of the darker kids in my school, a school named Hillel, which actually now is teaching kids. There is an exercise that came out, it was publicized actually, where one of the teachers was asking students to write a story from the perspective of the slave master, as opposed to...
Wait, what?
Yeah. So how do you justify slavery? It went viral. It was a huge thing. And the teachers justified it. Still to this day, they're like, well, we were just trying to make them understand all of the perspectives. And I'm like, what perspective? Why would you...
understand it needs to be understood.
Exactly. Wow. So I remember when I was in prep school... and, you know, in sixth grade, when you're about to graduate, everybody, you know, signs your shirt. And did you guys do this in prep school as well? Yeah. But somebody wrote black flesh on my uniform.
Is it?
Yeah.
Black flesh.
Yeah. And when I remember on days where I used to wear like my brownie uniform because I was a girl, you know, I was in Girl Guides. People used to mock me and say I'm a piece of shit. Like, I look like a piece of shit because I'm wearing brown on brown. This is in Jamaica, yeah. And this didn't come from the white kids either. This came from like teachers. It came from the other kids who were black, maybe lighter skin than me, but not necessarily the white kids or the white Jamaican kids, as I like to call them. So definitely for me growing up, it was a huge thing. And I think that made me even more resilient in terms of making sure that there were spaces for darker skinned women in whatever avenue I was working on, because literally it was something that was always made a point, whether in my family or outside of my family. Yeah, actually.
Now you live here, do you think that colorism is potentially more of an issue when you're in a country that is mostly black? Because, like, growing up, I didn't have that experience where it was, like...
Really?
Yeah, like, I didn't have that. Like, when I grew up, like, my family's really diverse. So we've got mixed race people, white people. Obviously, not they're, like, married and white, but to me, they're still family. Black people, we've got black people that are extremely light. Like, my nan, her skin colour is way lighter than you lot's. Like, and she's got, like, And then we've got the other side that are, like, dark, like, proper, proper dark. So, like, growing up, I was never really, like... conscious of colorism, because I guess naturally in our family we was all accepting of it, because the people that you love, your cousins, your mom, your dad, your uncle, whatever, they were all so different. You know what I mean? So I never had to really think about, like, there was never like a situation where the shade of my skin came into like any conversation.
But do you feel that way now because you're as an adult? Is it something that you're more aware of, or is it something that you've experienced as an adult now?
I think I'm only aware of it now because on like Twitter, Black Twitter, I kept talking about it like 2 years ago.
Really?
If I'm being completely honest, I didn't feel the need to be conscious of it before. I was never exposed to it. I never had a negative experience of it. But I think, interestingly enough, when that conversation came about, I was able to like look back onto certain things that happened that maybe were quite problematic or maybe linked to like issues surrounding colorism that I didn't know about at the time.
But also some of that might be just like British culture, like in terms of people are less likely to say things to your face. Like, I think British culture, people like, they know you can't be like straight up racist to someone's face. Like, you couldn't just tell someone they look like shit to their face because like you would probably get excluded. So like, it's more behind your back.
I still definitely do it though.
Yeah, I was going to say, because when I was at school, people were really cruel to people who were dark skinned.
Really? Like,
and they used to say really spiteful things. Mm. And also their country of origin would come into it. So they'd either call them just like black boo-boos, for example, was like a common one. Or, do you know what I mean? Or African this. And it's just like so spiteful.
But at the time, so like I remember that happening to one particular girl in my class who I was really close with. But in my head, it wasn't like, this sounds so silly, but even though they're making comments about how dark she was, in my head, it wasn't because she was dark. They were just teasing her. Do you know what I mean? That they were making comments to my friend because she was spotty. It's because she had spots. So in my head, it seemed like everyone got teased about something. That was just your thing. So I didn't digest that information as there being colorism or they're hating her because she's black. It was like, we're in this place called school where everyone gets teased, and that's just your thing to get teased on. Do you get what I mean?
And both of you grew up, Laurel and Shan, both of you grew up in predominantly white spaces, would you say, or?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. For the most part.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
My secondary school was quite diverse, though. There was a balance of people.
Yeah, so my primary school was really diverse. Like, my class, it was only one class per year. And they're the friends that I'm still friends with now. And we were probably majority black and mixed. So in terms of saying that phrase, which I absolutely hate in terms of I don't see colour, I didn't feel any different, is what I mean, when I was growing up until I got to secondary school. And then secondary school, again, was very diverse, but you could see the clear mix. The black majority of us stuck together. The white people stuck together. Asian people stuck together. And we did mix, but there was definitely, that's when I started seeing colorism towards and negative talk towards darker skinned women, darker skinned girls. And then it triggered me thinking about my primary school and certain people's comments about the darker skinned boys, which I never equated to colorism until I got to secondary school. Mm. And then started realizing a lot of the popular girls were either light skinned or mixed. And they did have brown girls, but they weren't dark. The darkest skinned girls, unless they were loud and funny, they were like deemed cool. Yeah. Otherwise, they were blick, you know, not have the good care.
That was something I was going to bring up. Yeah. Like, looking back, I remember that all the girls that I meant to be like cool or like, you know, there was like, well, for me anyway, in year seven, there was like three girls that everybody in the whole year fancied. No matter what race you were, these are like the buff girls, the pen girls, boom things. And like, when I was thinking about it today because I knew we was going to be discussing colorism. And I was thinking, what do they all have in common? They're all light skin, or they all got like what is called like acceptable hair. And that was it. And now it's funny because like now no one would like check for those girls anymore because for whatever reason, they wouldn't look at them anymore. But it's just interesting because they put like those same guys put a lot of, when we got to like year 11 or we got older, the same guys that were like bowing down to these girls were putting a lot of weight on like the black girls or like the darker skin girls or the brown girls. But like from year 6 and going into year 7 at that young age, that was somehow already like subconsciously embedded into them that was like what beauty is. So it's kind of interesting to have this conversation and to think about how deep-rooted it actually is. Because why did they go to that? Like, why did they grow up thinking that that was what beauty was? Because their mum probably wasn't all that colour.
And this is the thing that boggles my mind, right? Because I know, and you're probably right, going back to what you asked, in that growing up in a black majority country, the way in which you see colorism kind of unfold is really different. Because I was saying to someone else earlier today, actually, that there's a disproportionate number of Jamaican men that I know personally that come from a certain background. So let's, if we're using class as like a context, come from like a middle upper class background, who have lived in Jamaica all of their life and never dated a black girl ever in their entire life. And we're talking like the vast majority of your peers and counterparts are black. And even within my context, and it's interesting to come here actually and have the mixed race narrative apply to me when it really doesn't, because even within that context there are situations where I'll be standing or I'll be with like a light-skinned black girl and she'll still be deemed more attractive than me even though I'm mixed, which I think here is the complete opposite. It's like once you're mixed there's a natural, and that's because it's a half white half black kind of thing, right? So it's interesting because actually someone else in our group, in the infamous WhatsApp group that we've been developing, which you can join on to.
Which you can join.
By clicking the link in the Instagram bio.
Be a part of the conversation.
Said that, you know, as a light-skinned woman, she also feels like she has been ostracized within her community as well. And I don't know if this speaks to any of the experiences that you've had, Vic, as a lighter-skinned woman. Like, how do you navigate blackness? Or has there ever been a time where you've been challenged? What happens?
Definitely. So this has happened probably more often than not. So one guy started a pro-black platform, which I was really supportive of. But then once he started getting quite popular, he then put a post out about mixed heritage and why they really don't have a place in the community to speak on things about the black community. So naturally, I spoke up about it and he blocked my comments and blocked me from the page. And so I then tried to have a conversation, like a real life conversation with him. And he was just like, if you're mixed, you're not black, so you're not talking. You shouldn't take up space that other black people should have. And it, then it puts you in a position where you then are like, who am I then? So I know who I am. So for me personally, when people come at me like that, I think they've got, I just kind of bat it back to them because I think that's their problem. Maybe they don't understand what black means in terms of identity and what we've already spoken about on the first podcast. I can never be a white person. Even though I am half white, I can never be in a white category. And I am black. So to tell me that I can't speak on a subject or speak up or even create the platform that I've created to celebrate our culture, to be told, are you down for us though, really? Or to be challenged about my own identity, I find that extremely problematic. Just simply because looking at history in terms of civil rights movements and actually how coming together as a black community is the most progressive we can be. And so we're technically using the divide and rule to our own detriment. And I always question, like, why would you do that? Why are we not all in this together? And if you are in America, that one drop rule applies. And I do feel like it's a stark difference. When I went over to America to work for 3 months when I was 19, they didn't question my blackness and said they didn't actually know until 2 months in that I was half white. Because it's not a question that they even brought to me. Are you mixed? It didn't come up. So I find it in the UK specifically, there seems to be more of an issue as questioning, are you fully black? If not, do you have a space here? And I find that problematic.
Do you feel like there is ever a time when you have to choose though? And this is just me playing devil's advocate because it kind of plays into this idea when you just mentioned historically, kind of looking at some of the more popular civil rights female pioneers, whether we're talking about Angela Davis or Rosa Parks, and looking specifically at Rosa Parks, who was chosen as the face for that movement, instead of, I can never remember her name. And this is exactly the point.
Yes.
There was a darker skinned woman who was the first woman to not get off the bus. And she was put aside because she was like a single mom. She was darker skinned. And
she was
so it plays.
Year old black.
Yeah. And so it kind of plays into this whole idea of respectability politics. So, because Livs, you work in kind of an industry where, is there ever a time within your industry where you have to be like, oh, actually, let me give this space to a black girl to really comment on issues? Or how do you navigate that within the idea of knowing that people are going to pick you because of the fact that you're lighter skinned in certain circumstances?
So I've spoken on a number of different panels where, you know, a workplace would invite you in and ask you to talk about diversity, whether it's within the media or just like representation in general. And I'll always ask who else is on that panel, because it's really important to me that I haven't been ticked as like, she's the black girl, she's also the girl, like she's also the young girl. Like, and like, it's really important to me that that panel is diverse and that I'm not just brought on to represent a whole community. Because how could I possibly talk about black representation, for example, when I have no idea what it means to be dark skin? So I always ask like, who else is going to be on that panel, and just make sure that, I think it's about not expecting one person to have all the answers, because they're never, that's just not, it, that you would never put that in any other example where it's just like, oh, you know, we have this science experiment, but we only ask one person and we only have one set of results, but we're just going to go with it. Like that, like in a scientific sense, that would never be allowed. You would just be like, no, we need more than one test results. So it's kind of, if you're going to speak to black people about their experience being black, you need to speak to a range of different people, and they need to be of different shades, heritage, backgrounds. So when we talk about colorism, I think for me, it's kind of like, I really want to raise the voices of like dark skinned women and make sure that I'm not being patronizing. But it's really hard because it's like, I remember you were saying, I think you said this in the first episode, you talked about how your friend was like, you should go for Miss Black Britain.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you
yeah.
were like, I'm not going to do it because, like, I know that a dark-skinned woman, if I go, then a dark-skinned woman has less of a chance of winning. So I think it's those kind of examples of knowing when to speak and when not to speak and when to give up your place for someone who's has more to say on this subject.
I think it's interesting as well that the idea that, like, for the panel, you'd just be chosen and expected to represent the whole race. Because I remember when I worked in telly, And they'll do, I think I might have spoken about this on the first one as well. And they're doing a project about racism and what is racism. And it's this massive project they're going to put lots of product into. And the whole team was white. And they asked me to join the team.
Wait.
And what? But the maddest thing is, the things that they were saying were racist, I didn't find racist. So it was like, I ought to be taken off the team and to find somebody else because I wasn't representing the race enough, clearly. Like, there was people that were white saying to me, this is racist. And I'm like, I don't view this as racist. Or like, this is... what's that thing called? Cultural appropriation. And I'm like, I wouldn't find that offensive. So I think it's quite...
Why would they have a whole white team to start with? That's very wild.
It's the industry, isn't it? The industry was... The team is white. Do you get what I mean? Like, they have to hire a whole entire new team. Yeah. Which is what they should really do in situations like that. But they didn't. Shout out them. It was just like... no, but I had to take myself out of the situation because it was like... I'm not going to sit here and pretend I find these things offensive.
Wait, what were some of the things that they wanted you to find offensive? Just as a curiosity.
There were things that I think that most people would find offensive. I just didn't.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like, when I spoke to my friend who was mixed race, who was on the team, she wasn't on that project, but I worked with her, and I'd go and talk to her and be like, why should I find this offensive? And she would be like, some people might find it offensive because of this, but others might not find it offensive because of that. But I was always the person that didn't find it offensive. So why am I going to be on this project? Like, it just didn't make sense. But in their head, it was like, hey, we're doing something about race. There's a black person. Yep, choose her. But actually, the mixed race person in that scenario would have suited it better. Because she actually could speak on the position of someone who found all of these things offensive that I didn't.
I think that's the issue, because going back to what Leanne said in terms of taking up space, so acknowledging that, if you're light-skinned, you have light-skinned privilege, acknowledging that and knowing when to step aside, basically. You need to know that. But also, on the flip side of that, is owning who you are and not feeling like you have to be chastised every time you then put something out that's pro-black or create something that you think is hopefully representing and championing the voices of the community.
Because people pick and choose when they want you to be black and not black. Because Bob Marley's mixed race, but everyone, no one knows him as mixed race. Mm. Everyone knows him as a Jamaican black man that we cherish. So all these people that want to be doing...
Yeah. Same with President Obama. They're like the first black president. He's actually mixed race. Yeah.
But do you guys find this to be a women's issue? Because when I think of colorism, I don't really associate it as with men and as a man's issue. And an example, really basic example, is when I WhatsApp some of my dark skin friends or just dark skin people on my WhatsApp and I use an emoji, and even though they're dark skin, I would consider them to be dark skin, I always hesitate about when I represent them using the dark skinned like woman in case it offends people. Like, this is how deep things are in terms of colorism. Like, I worry when it comes to women, but if I'm messaging a man who's dark skin, I wouldn't hesitate. I'd put like the king emoji, that's like the darkest one.
Hey.
But
with best of the king.
Hey. But I just find this, I don't know if we can say it's a women's issue, but I just think of this in terms of a women's space.
Well, I think it manifests itself differently for women than it does for men, right? Well, I think there is a certain exoticization of black men that takes place. With women, it's more of like a self-esteem thing. So like when we think about skin bleaching, which is now becoming this $23 billion industry, it's something that I would say acutely affects women. Do you guys know any men that bleach?
Vibes Cartel.
I mean, other than Cartel. But he would say that he did it to make a political statement, right? Not because he genuinely wants to be lighter skin.
I don't know about that.
Oh, you don't know
about that? I don't believe
it. We can only go off of what he says. Oh yeah, alkaline too.
I think the problem might also be that like with women, there's like, we have like this, like, to take colorism out of it, we've got this pressure anyway to be beautiful or to be like idolized and to be attractive, whereas men don't really have that as much. Because like when you look at like courting and dating in a heterosexual relationship, the men normally go after the women. That's tradition.
Exactly.
So I feel like that's why the problem might be more prominent in against women, because if we've got this unconscious or subconscious bias of lighter skin being better, you're gonna want to aspire to be that because you want to be more desirable.
Yeah.
So I think that's why it's not an issue, because men, it's like, well, I'm going to choose you, you're going to choose me back anyway. It's kind of that sort of ego. Whereas women, you have to want to be picked. It's like even in school, there was a lot of pick me girls that would like, I love football. You don't love football. But they would want to do that because they want to be seen as like the cooler one or more closer to men or more likeable. Yeah. I think that's the same as colorism, but it's in a different reversed way.
It goes back to history in terms of the white woman being the most precious,
pure.
Wanted, pure women. in the Globe, apparently. And yet there is a fetishization.
The one. I know what you
With black men. So even as slaves, enslaved peoples, they were still, you know, deemed, no, not from the male, not from the white male perspective, but certainly from white women,
fetishization.
This is really bad.
I can't even know if I'm saying it properly.
Run with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what... Wow, look at me trying to be smart. And then I'm like, what's the word? Misogynoir is. So it's like you're battling against a society which has told you that your appearance is directly linked to your worth and your value. And then you're also told that your skin color is a direct result, direct link to your worth and value. So those two things combine, of course, it's going to affect women more than men.
This is the Dope Black Women Podcast.
So, like, I don't know if you guys have noticed this. I think there's been a couple of, like, think pieces wrote about it. But, like, I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I just think it's a thing. Like, you see white men who go for black women, it will always be a dark-skinned woman.
Yeah.
Like, and it happens a lot with YouTube couples.
100%.
That's not a thing I just, like, okay, cool.
Right. I was going to say,
but, like, what is that about? Is that something worth criticizing? Do you think it's conscious? Do you think, like,
I think there is two ways. I think it's on a continuum. I think there are definitely white and black people who fall in love with people outside of their race and it just happens organically. But I think there is equally this disproportionate thing of black men idolizing white women and white men fantasizing about fucking but not marrying black women or dark-skinned black women. And I guess for me, I think I mentioned this before, but for me, it's a little bit personal. God rest his soul. My father don't cuss me. But my dad, who is a very dark-skinned black man, strategically, and if I'm being honest, probably married my mom because she was a light-skinned foreigner. And because he knew trying to raise his social disposition in life, whether subconsciously or consciously, marrying somebody who was lighter skinned would make a difference. I don't know if he intended that his kids would turn out as dark as they did, but here we are.
Hello.
Look at God.
That makes like logical sense. Like, obviously it's sad that he thought that way, but I can't blame him. So, like, when it's the other way around, when it's, like, a white man after a black woman, like, what's the logical...
Well, what I was going to say was that even though he married my mom, who was lighter skin, when you looked at his girlfriends and all of his side pieces, because, like, every post-colonial man, he had many other women on the side, they were all black women.
Right.
Yeah. So I still think it works for black men, is that the darker skinned you are as a woman is the more you're fetishized.
Exoticized. We're all struggling with that word.
Yeah. You're more exoticized. And for me, no, even within dating, the fact that if I meet somebody who is like, whether they're light-skinned, black, or whether they're white or whatever, if they say to me, oh, you know, something about the tone of my skin in a way that feels like they're exoticizing me, it's problematic and I can't date them. As much as someone who's saying, oh, I'll date you because you're mixed even though you're dark skinned, I can't date them either. Mm. Which narrows down the dating pool significantly. But yeah, I don't know that many white men, so I don't know if...
Oh, my friends are black. Black and black.
Shout out, Cola, my one white friend.
Do you guys know any white men that are dating black women?
Yeah, one of my closest friends is a white guy.
And do you find it weird that he's dating?
No, he's gut dating someone who's biracial.
Okay. Yeah. So I know one white guy, and he only dates black girls. Like, literally,
Is it? When it's the I only hate white black girls.
I feel like that's a self-hate thing.
Well, it's like a fetishizing thing.
That's what I feel like.
Because it's fine to be like, I date black girls and brown girls and white girls. But if you're like, I only date black girls, it's like you're
I'm like, I only date guys who are light-skinned. Is that the same problem?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or guys that say I only date white girls and your mum is black. Like, yeah. I just feel like you've got issues when, 100%. Do you know what I mean? You say that kind of
stuff. I have so many friends who their mothers are black women, proud black women, mm-hmm. who literally, and here's the thing, some of these black men who are dating white women as well, they are pro-black, fist in the air. We love our black community. And for me, and I know this is a controversial thing, but I feel very strongly about it. There are, you're going to tell me not to say it.
No, because what I was thinking was problematic. That's why I stopped. But I want you to do yours and I'll do mine after.
How revolutionary is it? How much more revolutionary can you be in terms of empowering your black community other than promulgating it? Like, if you're not, if your intention, I remember I was dating this guy and he historically, leading up to when we started dating, had only ever dated white women, black guy. And I was like, so what are you doing with me? And subsequently, he's gone on to only date black women. And he's like, because I want my kids to look like me. And I want my kids to...
What was he doing with the white woman?
Just fucking about.
Because I know somebody... who's with this black man, he's dark skinned, and he's with someone, he's all his partners have been white, he's had children with them. But when I spoke to them, he was just with, can I just say, I've got white friends that I really appreciate and love. No, because I think what I'm going to say, I don't want to think it's me saying it. But what they basically said was, is that like they found it easier to be with women who were white. And it's problematic on two issues. Because one, they're suggesting that being with black women are difficult and hard. And
inherently difficult and hard.
And that's a problem in itself. But also, I felt like, so really you want to be with a black woman, but you're just choosing to be with someone for like, choosing to be with someone's sake. Do you know what I mean?
You think it's quote unquote easier to be with a white woman?
That's what, no, they think.
That, yeah. Yeah. Rochelle's like, no, wait. No, I get it. I think that is a thing. Yeah. Like, that is
I think that's a very big thing.
Yeah. And it goes back to like black women being quote unquote...
Angry,
feeding into the stereotype,
blah, blah, blah. That even a black man, black, I don't want to deal with this.
But like, when you look at movies, like some movies will portray the dark women as like these like crazy, unkempt.
Oh my gosh, my favourite film. You just nailed it on the head. Is it Best Man's Holiday? No. What's that film yet? Where at the start of the scene, they're in the airport. It's so funny. She starts going crazy. Like, oh my God. But anyway, the dark skinned woman, there's a brown skinned woman and there's a dark skinned woman. And the dark skinned woman is the crazy one throughout the whole film.
Is this Why Did I Get Married?
Sorry, it's that one.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
Oh, what's the husband's name? Is she always used to call up his Malcolm?
I don't know, but she dates the one who's like a sports presenter, isn't it?
They all have the same voice as well. They're like, yes.
That is definitely one of my favourite films. But look at that film.
How they portray her.
She's the darkest one in the clan. She's the craziest one from a mile off. No one's even like a tip crazy. She's just mad.
It's true. And Jill Scott is the light skinned one who we all feel really sorry for and got treated badly. Yeah.
The one that has cancer.
No, she's not the one that has cancer. Best Man Holiday.
These are all my favourite films.
And I'm not saying that you can't date a white woman and still be pro-black, but I think if you're going to marry outside of your race and your race is really important to you, that person has to be equally as invested and equally as understanding. So you're just like how Vic's mom, we talked about in the first episode, used to make jollof and all of these other kind of ethnic foods. I think it's really important that if you're going to marry into somebody else's race, that you have an awareness and an understanding and are equally as passionate about it as the other person. And if they're not, I feel like that's a clear red flag, right?
Yeah, definitely. Whilst we're on the topic of dating, so like something that I've always found interesting is like, I've never really been conscious about it, but like I've always been more attracted to like dark skinned men.
Mm.
Like,
woo.
I mean,
me too.
Yeah.
But like, I definitely
Do you think that's a problem?
No, I don't think it's a problem.
A minute ago, I said if my type was light skinned men, everyone was like, yeah, it's a problem. Yeah, that's a problem.
No.
Let me
more like colorism.
If they're
dark skin, it's
alright.
No.
Let me clarify.
I didn't actually answer.
Well, I just want to say that's a very wild view.
Let me clarify. Because this is...
Everyone heard what you said before.
This is fake news. Ready, you know.
This is fake news. So basically, whilst my exes have all been dark-skinned,
mm-hmm.
I don't have anything against dating a guy who's light-skinned or white, whether... If you have this kind of tunnel vision of I only date people of a certain race, it becomes a problem because you don't see them as individuals. Mm-hmm. You only see them as like your race is like a top tier quality to have. So like you could date a dickhead and be like, oh, this is black. Mm-hmm. Like,
Here's the thing, though. I think
well, that's a problem. You do that. So I dated without baiting up my whole life, but
come on, Vic.
Basically, all bar one has been black. But the reason I don't think it's an issue, in terms of going back to what you said, is I do, or maybe it is an issue, but I think I equate when you are solely going, I prefer lighter skinned men or white men. I do think that's an issue with self-hate, specifically related to the black community, mainly because of our history and our colonial history and slavery. If we didn't have that, then I think it would be a bit more like, take whoever you want. But I think, and maybe it is wrong, I'm not saying this is the right thing, but I automatically go to, if someone does have a preference for lighter skinned, I think, I just think that there may be something deeper than that. But I get also...
No, I do hear it. Because like in my head, if I met a guy and he was like, only date light skinned girls, you know, I'd be like, okay, chill out. But I think I do think it's mad that if they're going to be like, the blanket statement that we're all black, and this is the black spectrum... That like taking the slavery bit out of the way, and this is why I'm saying that sometimes my views are problematic, because it's easy for me to take it out of the way.
It does work the other way.
I think if I want to be like, I'm only dating black dark skinned men or dark skinned women, I'm fetishizing those people. That's how I look at it personally. For me, I date whoever, you know.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's down to intention. I think you have to be, if you have an awareness, like I also have historically only dated darker skinned men. Mm. Not only because like my dad's dark skinned and obviously he's the first kind of representation that I had of
my
man,
etc.
Well,
but you know,
that sounds like a whole new episode.
Let's go back.
But also because I've found that lighter skinned men just aren't interested in me. Mm. So by and large, my interests are guided, as you said, Shan, kind of in terms of, because men are the aggressors, and, you know, if dark-skinned men disproportionately are approaching me, then that's probably what I would go for. And I don't have a subconscious attraction to the other, whether that's a white man or a light-skinned man, which many people do. And I think the failure of us to really identify what that thing is boils down to this kind of historical indoctrination, which kind of, for me, everything goes back to slavery and colonialism. I'm sorry. Mm. But, and then again, so you do have women who are trying to aspire to be likable because they want to be found attractive, whether it's by dark-skinned black men or light-skinned black men or white men. And that goes back into what we were talking about this whole skin bleaching thing. Nobody's hair is a skin bleacher. Just checking.
That'd be awkward.
I mean, I used to be a lot darker. I was 5'20" in Rihanna, but now I'm 4'20".
But here's the thing, right? So I feel like a lot of the products that we use generally are skin bleaching products and we don't even realize it. Like, I didn't know that Dove was...
Dove?
Yeah.
Dove?
Yeah.
Dove?
My Nivea. So I'm not allowed to use Dove because of the advert.
Nivea.
Yeah.
Wait, what advert?
Where the woman was black and then she used Dove and she was white.
Oh, yeah. I definitely used it.
To be fair, it was not like a Japanese advert. So in my head, I'm like, what can I do to control what happens in Japan?
So fun fact, guys. Fun fact, guys. So Dove, who in other countries, other non-Westernized countries, obviously promote skin bleaching in a much heavier way, are actually owned by Unilever. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys have listened to the Burna Boy song. Yeah. This is my source of history. But the Burna Boy song on his most recent album, I can't remember the actual name of the song.
African Giant.
There you go.
African
Giant. This album.
So Unilever was previously called the Niger Company. And the Niger Company is historically responsible for the sale of Nigeria. So formerly, Nigeria was sold to Britain for £865,000 in 1900, from the Niger Company. So the Niger Company formerly owned Nigeria. Then they sold it to Britain. And obviously then history happened and, you know, independence and all that stuff. Sorry, but the Niger Company, which obviously was responsible for the wholesale of a country, is now responsible for our beauty products for, by and large, majority of people.
Yo. Unilever, if you could look at the brand, or if you go to...
I know, I feel like I've seen it before.
You can see it in everything.
And I think it depends on the specific type of product that you buy from Nivea or from L'Oreal or from Dove.
extra moisture.
But
actually, it's my first time using it. It's really good.
It keeps you... The cream in particular, like the lotion, keeps you warm during the winter. Like it is one of the thicker creams that you can buy in a mainstream store. So I see how they use those tactics towards Black people to get them. And then subconsciously, you don't even realize that that's what you're doing. Because every old man I know in Jamaica use Nivea as like to keep his face cool, quote unquote. But really what it's doing is doing what the Victorians used to do back in the day, which is to make their face look ghostly. Because even for white people, it was something to aspire to, apparently, back in the day.
Oh, so do the creams have lightening stuff in it?
Some of them do, yeah. Not every product.
Oh, that's
product.
What you meant a minute ago. So, yeah, I don't
think mine, supporting products that are, especially in Africa, in countries in Africa, they are pushing. Like, they're pushing it like no other. Even in Cape Verde or Cabo Verde, where I go quite a lot, there's huge billboards that literally promote skin lightening cream. And their Dove and Nivea.
So,
and this is a Black country that is fully supporting it.
So, would you now not buy Nivea products because in Africa, or not just Africa, because it's not just African issue, but in other countries, they use to
me personally, yeah,
promote skin lightening.
Well, I just don't find them as effective as me going in to buy. When I buy soap, I buy African Black soap. I buy coconut oil soap. Like, I buy, everything that I buy now, including my lotion, is like shea butter, raw shea butter. And then I'll either whip it myself or somebody will do it for me. Yeah. Because they just don't work as well.
They don't work on my skin, honestly.
It's so cheap. And it's so good for your skin.
But I think
you don't need these products.
This comes down to education, though, because we are not taught about these things and how they affect our community.
That's wild. You're not saying they sold Nigeria.
Right?
I'm giving my coin.
Right?
I've got to find a new cream.
To the massa.
That's very wild, you know?
And there are certain countries that are banning it now. So, like, Ghana recently banned it, I believe. And where else?
Banned it, but they're still...
That oh, really?
There's always going to be a black market, isn't
there? Yeah, there's a black market, but they still push it. Like, in the media, they still have, again... billboards, like luckily when I went to Accra, I didn't see any of that, but having read some of the literature that we were
even here I live in East London. I went to the black hair shop
in the
I posted this in the WhatsApp group. I went to the black hair shop in like Barking, and literally the entire wall was covered with skin bleaching cream or skin lightening or making your skin fairer.
I don't
or
see these things. I don't know if I'm
Straugian
just
Road. I'm calling them out.
I shot
in there my whole life. Like, I know people from my secondary school used to come down from South London all the way to like Finsbury Park to buy their stuff. And the last time I went in there, the whole aisle was skin whitening. And I'm like, no.
But even if you go to threading shops, like typically Southeast Asian threading shops, they will have on their menu skin bleaching as a treatment that you can have.
Really?
Yeah. So especially like if you go to East Ham, for example.
I live in a rock because I haven't seen my hair shop. I don't see all these skin lightening. I know that there is some products there. I've seen like the one or odd two bottle. But when you posted that picture, I was like gobsmacked. There was so many different products. And I don't see that stuff. When did you guys first become aware that skin bleaching was even a thing?
Well, Shan was today years old.
No,
I'm only teasing you,
For me, actually, it was when I was younger. I used to go to the hair shop of my mum. When I was a lot younger, we used to go to this hair shop where this lady was German and she used to do like our hair. She was the baddest. Oh my gosh, I don't know where she is now. But she was really good at doing hair. And she used to, I remember asking my mum, like, why is her knuckles so much darker than the rest of her hand? My mum just being like, oh, because she bleaches, and that was it. And then I remember always going out with my mum, and she'd always point out to me, like, or I would always, from that moment, clock when, like, a woman's ankle, like, you know, the knuckle bit, the bone on your ankle would be dark, and the rest of her body's mad light. And then at one point, I don't even know what year this was, but it was like a craze. I'd always just see these people, and they were always just mad light, and it was like a dirty light. Not to be rude, is that rude? I don't know. I don't care now. But they were like,
yeah, it's not
ashy.
Like a pink, it wasn't like they were light skinned. It was like they're, you know, like sometimes you might put a face mask on, then you have an undertone where it's like you now look yellow or you look a different color. It was like their skin color was an ill color, and that, it was always. And then I'd look at them and see that, and I would see their knuckles or parts of their hands and be like, oh, it's because they bleach. That was mine. What was you lot's?
I'm not gonna lie, I think it was Vibes Cartel.
Really?
Because I think I was in secondary school. I think I must have been about like 14, 15. Like the first time I saw like a major like starch
difference. And people were like, what happened to him? People were like, oh, he bleached. And I remember thinking like, shit, like, that's a thing? Because when you're that age, you hear the word bleach, you automatically think of like bleach that you put down your toilet. And I was thinking, he put that on his skin? What's going on? And like, over time, I realised like, oh, this is a whole, like, this is a thing. So I think, yeah,
it's crazy.
I think it was similarly when I was a teenager in school days, I started discovering myself and going to the hair shop, and my hair shop was a Jamaican lady. Big up Shelly Ann. And in there, so in there, people used to come in and they were like looking funny. Yeah, their complexion. I was like, rah, what's happened to these people? Like, they look funny. I didn't actually realize it was bleaching. And then obviously musically seeing vibes, and it just was more of a topic of conversation. When I realized that, like, rah, people bleach their skin like this. And I similarly thought, is it bleach? But obviously as I got older, but from a teenager, seeing that community looking weird, I just thought they looked...
Do you get what I mean there about the colour of their skin looks weird?
Pinky.
It's like almost burnt though, because if you, it's like pinky.
You are literally burning your skin. Yeah, you're burning the melanin out of your skin.
Yeah, you are.
It's mad.
Taking it out. And I think I don't remember how old I was when I was either told or questioned someone's skin colour, but it was young. Mm. And I remember just thinking, I understood then about colourism, but the depth in which someone would go to change, to take the melanin out and to you know, discolour their skin, and they're not even looking like the desired outcome that they want.
That's the saddest part.
Like, that's the thing. And to see women today, like so many women today, and just still doing it, and it's on such a grand scale that you're just, it's heartbreaking, to be honest.
It's crazy.
I remember watching this show. I don't know if it was a Jamaican TV show, but it was like a talk show. It might have been Maury or one of those other TV shows. What's the black guy, bald-headed, Montel Williams?
Steve Harvey. Yeah.
No, it's Steve. Oh, nah. Steve is bald as well.
Yeah.
I think it was Montel Williams. It might have been before the time of Steve Harvey. But there was a black woman who had brought her daughter on stage, and I shit you not, her daughter was like less than 5.
No.
And she was bleaching her daughter at 5. And I was just like,
child services.
Child
this right? is, it is. But it was,
I find that so wild.
It's so wild. And it's like, why do you want to I mean, this is something that brings physical harm, real health concerns. Like, you are stripping melanin from your skin, which obviously has its own advantages.
Well, the mom's dark
skin cancer.
Yeah.
The mom was dark.
The mom was dark skin. Like, she was bleaching, but she was dark enough that you could, she was still dark even though she was bleaching. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But the girl, the daughter, was fairly light skinned, and she was making her even lighter. But again, not with the same kind of like muddled, dirty light skin tone. And I was just like, it doesn't even work properly. Like, is this whole bad? Like, it's so mad to me. And this is, again, it's such a direct thing from colonialism and slavery for me. Like, literally, this is how people, white people, have taught us to hate ourselves and to divide this whole light skin versus dark skin and all of that kind of stuff.
But even dark skin versus dark skin, sorry, because thinking about music, Spice, I just have to say, this whole Black Hypocrisy video, when I saw...
Wait, just explain the video.
So in the video, for those who haven't seen it, she gets a makeup artist to basically make her look like she's bleached her skin, and she's literally about 10 shades lighter at one point in the video. And there was a whole kind of Instagram conversation and debate because people like shocked to see the transformation. But I went to an interview where she was being interviewed one time, and the reason that she even did that video was because people were coming at her on Twitter, dark skinned people, saying how black she is.
Mm-mm.
And it's just like crazy, the level of self-hate. Yeah, there's literally no other term. Yeah. It's mad.
Having read some of what we were reading earlier in terms of the medical, the impact it has on the community in terms of skin cancer, and skin cancers that have been found in some African countries that were never before.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's only been recorded since skin bleaching products have been introduced into the country. So for me, this is a public health issue. And what I don't understand is there's still no research, real research, adequate enough for doctors to actually respond to this and put something out by saying this is actually harming your skin. And a lot of people don't realise that when you're bleaching the melanin out, melanin reforms. So then it becomes black pigmentation on your skin anyway. So then they then use more bleach to try and cover that. And that is where there's a term, and I forgot what it's called, but I read it today. Begins with an O.
Oh, acronosis or something
yes,
like that?
That is it.
Oh, yes.
And it's a form of that's skin cancer. Right.
I read it today, guys.
But yeah, and so many women specifically are now dealing with that. And so for me, more questions are, why isn't this being dealt with in a more serious way than just us talking about colorism and it being a self-hate issue, which we know the root causes, but what in terms of going forward needs to happen? Because is this going to stop? And is it going to, or are we going to have swathes of women and men basically developing cancer, which we know is already happening?
So, like, I mean, like, you've kind of touched on it a bit there in terms of, like, seeing it as a public health issue. And I think that's such an interesting, different perspective that I didn't really think about before. But, like, the rest of you guys, what do you think needs to happen in order to, like, push things forward so it doesn't become, like, a continuous cycle?
God, there are so many things that we can do, right? Mm-hmm. One is, like, having conversations with young people all the time. And there are so many times I'm talking to a young person and I'm sure they find it really weird, but I will literally talk to a young people and I'm at work or whether it's my goddaughter and I will literally say, you're so beautiful. Oh my gosh, love your hair, love your skin. You know what I mean? I remember one of my friends, she's half Chinese, half black, and she had a kid with a dark skinned guy. And I would say her son is probably like Shan's complexion. And he's 7 and he hates going in the sun. Mm. And he's like, Mommy, I just want to be like you. He's like, I just want to be your skin color. And he's 7, you know what I mean? Mm. And I'm just like, how do you... And she's like, Leanne, I don't know what to do. I try to talk to him about this all the time. I tell him that he's beautiful. I tell him that he's lovely.
Things at school, though, that contribute towards it.
Yeah,
so I'm sure.
Like, presentation.
She comes home and says wild stuff. And I'm like, where'd you get that from? Mm-hmm. Hey, Sally at school. Shh, don't worry about Sally.
Do you have that with your siblings? Because you have younger siblings as well,
yeah,
right?
I think the same thing. I think in terms of answering the question and going back to what you just said, I think for me personally, I'm just here to live my best life. So for me, my responsibility that I would do, because this is such a big issue that I personally, this is just me, that for like, I can't make the change for it. But what I can do is contribute towards like future generations. So for me, it's like, cool, I know this is an issue and I know that I didn't really understand how much of an issue it was until later on in life. So for my siblings, I can educate them. So I've got a brother who's 17 and one who's 7. I can talk to them so that they don't navigate the dating world for whether they're like men or women or whatever, in a way that like continues the cycle of making dark skinned women hate themselves. And like for my sister, it's about encouraging her to know that she is beautiful. So my sister, I think she's a little bit darker than me. But like the other day I noticed a patch on her skin. And I said to my mum, it might be vitiligo. Mm. Because I'm looking at her face, she's now like, oh my gosh, what's on my face? And she's at 4. And I was like, it's fine. Either way, you're still buff. You're pretty. And now every time I see her, I keep making her be like, are you pretty, yeah? And she'll be like, yeah. And I'll be like, just remember that you're pretty. Aww. And I feel like if you always... For me, I always say this, especially when it comes to like dating or like relationships. For me, it's all about, like, I feel like I'm here to learn in life and then make the next generation have a better life and to keep going. So as long as I encourage my siblings or the people around me to be better versions of themselves or to educate them on what I know about colorism, that's me doing what I would consider as my part. And then also, to some degree, calling people out. Mm. But I don't mean in a way that's like belittling them. And I think that for me, the reason why I say not belittling them is because I know I've come from a place of being naive or being ignorant at a point, and it just became, just because I just didn't know, I just wasn't educated. It wasn't because I was trying to be like pro this or not pro that. I just genuinely didn't know. So I think as long as when we have opportunities like this platform to talk about it, that we do, and then when we see people saying problematic things, that we say to them, you know, actually, maybe you shouldn't say things like that because it means that. Or do you know where these things come from? Well, like how we've learned today about the Nivea. I might have to think twice now about putting that in my basket. But these all things make change. Because I'm now going to go home and be like, Mum, you know, my mum doesn't use Nivea, but she's more like you with all these natural creams, creme brulee. But I'm going to be like, Mum, you know this is... Okay. And then my friend from... You know that this is... Do you know what I mean? And I think like that makes a... What's it called? Like that makes a cycle of change.
Yeah. Mm.
That's like me.
I think like you really hit the nail on the head as well about... This kind of, we all have a responsibility when it comes to future generations. because I don't know if you guys have seen, oh my gosh, one of the things that really grinds my gears is like white women on Twitter who upload a picture of a light-skinned baby and they'll be like, oh my God, this is the kind of baby I want. Like, I want this kind of baby. I want a mixed race baby. So like, imagine you and this dark-skinned man have a baby. If that baby comes out dark-skinned and like, God forbid, was able to come across your tweet, that's horrendous. Like, that's awful. And that is such a normalized thing about being light-skinned and light-skinned babies and like having light-skinned babies. And I'm like, it's so odd, like, that there's this weird like cycle of perception around light skin to the point where like it's so people don't even see how problematic it is. You have like the guts to upload that on Twitter or like a public platform. You don't realize how problematic that is. And also someone mentioned earlier about dark skinned men and how some dark skinned men won't date dark skinned women. And then you say things like, you know, your mum is black, and they'll be like, yeah, but I'm not dating my mum. Like, that's always their response.
I see that all the time.
It pisses me off so much. And I'm like, I don't think you get it. I don't think you get what I'm saying. Like, yeah, I'm not trying to date my mum though, am I? Oh my gosh, that grinds my gears so much. Sorry, I went a bit of tangent there.
For me, I think also another way that we can try and address this is this generation. I see it as a generation of disruptors. Like, we are like shutting shit down, like, and
shaking the table, honey.
We're shaking it. So thinking about like the hair relaxer and hair shampoo stuff, like a lot more people embracing their natural hair, and we've affected sales of these companies. We're selling the creamy crack, but also but also a lot of shampoos now, like, they're trying to make sure people know they're sulfate-free, paraben-free, all of this stuff, because people started getting educated and realising. So I think,
what's wrong with that? Because I buy it just because I see free and I'm like, it must be a bad thing. seriously.
It will dry out your
hair. Yeah, it strips your hair of all the natural oils that
you
have.
I just see free and I'm like, well, that means nobody wants that, so I'll get this one.
So I think if we can try and hit the companies where it hurts, which is their profit, and try and reinforce their corporate social responsibility and other ways that they can make money from the community rather than helping to kill us, then that's a way that we'll make an in.
So for me, I'm a proper like protests and boycott type of person. Don't care. I'll have an argument all day about what they mean. But I just think sometimes you need to stand with people and people need to see that you're standing against something. I think boycotts are important. So, and I know, because the black pound in this country is serious, like the black dollar in America is serious. So when we withdraw from that, it really does, as Laurel said, make a difference financially to these companies. So it either makes them look, reflect and think, what do we need to do now? Or we just make our own shit. I'm so for black people need to get, I mean, they are on it. We're on it all day long. But Instagram, someone needs to come up with a black version.
Blackstagram.
Seriously, but black. someone needs to do it, because the amount of, and I know this is a different podcast to be quite honest with you, but the amount of bans and shadow bans that are happening to pro-black platforms are ridiculous. And actually, we just need to up and leave. And we need to up and leave, because people need to get on this.
I mean, those are four completely different ways, whether you're talking about activism, whether you're talking about boycotting, whether you're talking about educating a younger generation, whether you're talking about just cussing people out in the streets for their dumbass comments. There are so many different ways in which we can affect that kind of change, particularly because colorism is something that is happening within our community and not necessarily happening to us. Do you know what I mean? And I think it's just important for us to recognize that if you're down for the cause, you're down for the cause. Like, light skin, black skin, we're all dope black women. We're all here with the same agenda to support and empower each other. And if you're not, then you ain't dope.
And I think things are changing. Like, slowly but surely, we are seeing changes. So, you know, for example, Lizzo was on the front cover of Vogue this month, and she is a dark-skinned black full-figured woman, and like I just that fills me with joy. Even though I'm not dark-skinned myself, I can imagine how many young dark-skinned girls pick that up, looking at Vogue as one of like the highest established magazines of all time and seeing a dark-skinned black woman on it. So I think things are changing, but it's also up to us in the actual community to keep having these conversations.
No, for sure. I think it's really important. The conversations are important. The activism is important. The boycotting is important, and hopefully we can just, you know, work together to move past this, because I think it's something that's really crippling our community in terms of us, our capacity to move forward. But yeah, it was a good one, guys. Shan?
Before we go, just want to say Christmas Link Up is on December the 19th.
Whoop, whoop.
That's December the 19th. If you want to come, you can email us at dopeblackwoman1@gmail.com, or you can DM us on Instagram at dopeblackwoman1. It's going to be great. Food, networking, music, all of that good stuff.
Cocktails. Don't forget the cocktails.
Don't forget the cocktails. And our first drink is going to be half price on happy hour rate. So
whoop, whoop.
Be there or be square.
So thanks, guys, for listening to the podcast again. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. On Twitter and Instagram, we are Dope Black Woman 1. And on Facebook, we're just Dope Black Woman. And as Shan said earlier, if you're interested in joining our WhatsApp group, go on to Instagram, click on the link, and it will get you to where you need to do. Yeah, we want more women to join. We love hearing the different views. A lot of the podcast topics that we have come out of the WhatsApp group and the conversations that are happening on Instagram, etc. So, yeah. We'll be back next week. Until then, stay blessed and unapologetically black.
All the way black.
Blackity black.
Blacktastic.
Woo!
There's only four, because remember last time it was October.
Oh, right, right, right.
Last time we had Blacktober.
Yeah. You can't come up with black.
If you both... If we did...
Blackvember.
Blackvember. Sounds a bit dark.